And so we were just shopping, and people would walk by, and of course I'm going, and I'm like waving at all everybody, and then I was like, why are these people looking at me so strange? They're all giving me like this really weird look. And my roommate said, well, it's because we're not in costume. I'm like, oh no.
Welcome to Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff, where we interview newsmakers, storytellers, and all-around interesting people. Sit back, relax, unless you're driving, and enjoy the show. Here's Jackson.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Jackson Huff. This is Not in a Huff. Thanks so much for joining me. As always, really appreciate it. This week, I'm speaking with Bullseye the Clown. Now, Bullseye is a clown with a purpose. We're going to talk a little bit about what that is. The main thing that he promotes at this point is against bullying. He helps people overcome that. He gives people tools to overcome it. Really a passionate guy when it comes to helping others. He also is somebody who does a lot of charitable work when it comes to clowning, if you will. He has traveled across the globe on missions to help underprivileged societies. He's traveled to different places and performed in hospitals to help those dealing with issues. Have a smile for the day. He's went a lot of times to South America. He's went to Russia, all over the place, and he learned from the best. I don't know whether you've seen the movie Patch Adams or heard of Patch Adams. The movie was, of course, starring Robin Williams, but it was about a doctor who kind of used humor and things in his medicine. It's a real person. Patch Adams is a real person, and Bullseye was actually trained, if you will, by Patch Adams. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about just becoming a clown and what that has entailed and some funny stories along the way with that. How he decided what kind of clown he wanted to be, a happy clown, a sad clown, all kinds of different clowns are out there. How he decided on the makeup that he uses. He did come in complete clown makeup, so I do urge you to check out the reel that comes with these episodes to check out exactly what Bullseye looks like in all his glory. But no, this is a really fun conversation. How you become a clown, that's pretty interesting, and then the amazing things that he's doing. So I really think you're going to enjoy this one. If you haven't already, go follow along on Instagram and on TikTok, Not Enough Podcast. Go follow along or subscribe on Apple and Spotify to the podcast. Leave a written review on Apple, really helps. But here is Bullseye the Clown. Bullseye, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm going to kind of let you do the heavy lifting. Just introduce yourself.
Okay, well, my name is Bullseye the Clown. I'm a humanitarian clown who goes to different countries, and I deliver food and vital resources to like underserved communities. I wasn't always a clown. I became a clown later in life, actually like after the age of 50. And they don't tell you all these things when you become a clown. Like when you become a clown at my age, how to like put makeup on old wrinkly skin and things like that. So, my dad passed away in 2018. And before that, I was actually a stand-up comedian for like 10 years. And I decided when my dad passed away to do something crazy. I wanted to take a trip somewhere, and he never traveled. So I remembered seeing a movie years ago called Patch Adams. And I remembered that he was actually like a real person. And so I decided to log on to his website to see what he was up to. And I saw that he had a trip coming up to Russia, where he takes like clowns into Russia and goes into orphanages and children's hospitals and hospices and things like that. And so I thought, well, I don't really know anything about being a clown, but I think I'll just see if I can go. And so I sent him a message, and he was like, oh yes, come along. You don't need to have any clown experience or anything like that. And so this was like a 14-day boot camp into clowning. So probably I should have known how to do a few other things prior to going, but looking back on it, and I never really thought I would clown again after I got back from Russia. I thought that's like a one and done kind of thing. But then I just saw the impact that the clowns had on all the people that we interacted with. And so I figured there's got to be a way to figure out how to do this once I get home. And so that's kind of how this little story began. I wasn't always a clown.
And I wanted to kind of to highlight that, given that you joined this world kind of later in life. You talked about how for 10 years you were a stand-up comedian. You said you became a clown after 50, so we've still got another 40 years of something going on. And you know, what else have you done in your career?
I was also a personal trainer. I used to weigh about 350 pounds, and I lost a bunch of weight just through diet and exercise, not having like any type of surgeries or anything. And so I did get a personal training certification. The gym that I was working out at all the time, people kept coming up to me and asking me, you know, how to lose weight and how to get in shape. And so the gym decided to hire me and give me a certification to be a personal trainer. And so, and actually that's kind of how I bridged the gap after I learned to become a clown and got back to the United States. I thought there's got to be a way to do both, you know, do a bunch of different things. And so I actually developed the clown fitness program where I'd actually take this into like senior communities. And so I was, that's kind of how this whole thing started. I thought, well, I'll just do that. I'll develop a program of exercise with balloons and bands and all kinds of fun stuff. And I'll just take it into memory cares and assisted livings. And so that's kind of how that all kind of started. And then it just kind of morphed as the years went on. I worked at an amusement park as a games host, one of those annoying people trying to get you to play their games. So I worked at an amusement park for 2 years.
Yeah. And you've always kind of been, you know, it sounds like kind of performing, so to speak, you know, whether it was stand up, whether it was the game thing, you know, you sound personal trainer, that's all kind of a in front of people kind of performing thing. So that just must be kind of your lifeblood, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I was a theater major in college. I had this desire that I was going to be, you know, the next, you know, Brad Pitt or, you know, Tom Cruise. That didn't quite work out, as you can see. So after college, I got a job doing traveling around doing Mr. Wizard. I don't know if you've ever seen that TV show. You're kind of young. So I was a TV program that was on for years. It was a Mr. Wizard would do like science programs for children. And so he had a traveling troupe that they would go from school to school and they would do a different science program as like an assembly program. And so that was my first job out of college, was traveling around doing Mr. Wizard. And so I guess I just always had this knack, and everybody kept saying, all the plays you're in, you're so funny, you should be a stand-up comedian. And I never really thought about it. And I thought, well, I don't know the first thing about becoming a stand-up comedian. And then I found a book on how to be a stand-up comedian. So I just kind of started doing the exercises in the book. And before long, that took off for a little while. So
yeah, I think that's awesome. And I want to kind of talk about the stuff behind you. You talked about Patch Adams. You've got a picture with Patch Adams himself. You've got like on the other side, I don't know if it's like Emmett Kelly or something.
Oh, yeah, that's Emmett Kelly right there, yep.
Yeah, so you've got a lot going on. And I'll tell you the reason I know a little bit about the world of clowns and circuses. I don't know how much of the history of circuses and clowns you know about, but I live in Indianapolis, Indiana now. But when I was a kid, I actually, through elementary school, I lived in Peru, Indiana. So Peru is a big circus town. They still have it. I think it's like the biggest amateur circus in the world there, but that's where the winter quarters for a lot of big circuses were back in like the 30s and 40s and stuff. Oh, wow. I think like Emmett Kelly's son is buried there or something. I don't know. There's something with Emmett Kelly there too, but I can't remember all the history. But so that's why I know a little bit about that world, but I don't know too much. But yeah, I want to ask you, I guess, a little bit about your, you know, you already talked about how you kind of just jumped in feet first with, you know, going to Russia with Patch Adams. A lot of people know about him because of the movie, you know, Robin Williams starred as him. I assume some of that probably took some, you know, creative liberties how any movie does, but still people know about him. So what was that experience like? You know, it wasn't like you were just going to some small thing. You were going to a pretty big name person right off the bat. So tell us about that experience. And then maybe, you know, just to make this question as long as possible and as hard as possible to answer, you know, given that it was kind of your first foray into clowning, what did you find was the hardest part of doing it. Like you would have thought, oh, I didn't realize this was going to be as difficult as it was.
That's a long question. So
it is, yeah. If you can't answer all of it, it's okay. I just kept going and going.
I'm a clown. I can do it. I can do it. Okay.
All right.
So, well, yeah. So basically that's one of the reasons I kind of chose this particular tour was because of Patch Adams. And I know that that's why a lot of people go on his tours is because of Patch Adams. He was definitely a lot different than what the movie portrayed. And so I've actually gone on other tours with him since the first one. And so I actually was able to do that picture that you see on the wall right there. That actually was the cover of a magazine. I actually did an article and an interview with him on one of our other clown tours. And so I always ask him, you know, how close was the movie to your life? And he said, if you thought the movie was bad, he says, I am 10 times worse than that. They really tamed it up to make it into like a Hollywood film. And yeah, he's definitely not afraid to share his opinion. So he was definitely opinionated on lots of things. But the one thing that always rang true, no matter what it was basically, are we having a good time? Are we making an impact? And we weren't allowed to whine. There was no whining on our trips. So if something wasn't going right, you just smiled and that was our job, was to go do everything we could to make everybody smile. And I was, you know, honestly, I was kind of petrified, especially when, you know, they sent us into a hospital and then they said, you know, okay, go into the hospital rooms and make people laugh. And I'm like, oh, okay. The one aspect that I really wasn't even thinking about it before I left. If I had been, I might not have gone. But the major aspect was, you know, we couldn't talk to them. I couldn't talk to them because they were all Russian. They all spoke Russian and I was English. And so I couldn't really carry on a conversation. So everything that I did had to be some type of physical comedy or some kind of, you know, I mean, I would pick up like little words here and there, you know, like hello, goodbye, thank you. And just enough to at least walk into a room. But to me, I suppose that was the hardest thing at first to overcome was, okay, I can't really talk to them, you know, and which actually became a problem when they would send like two clowns, you two clowns go here, you two clowns go on this floor, you two. And then of course, you know, they're like, you know, the bus is going to leave at such and such time. And so we're up on some third floor, but you got to go down one floor and go across and go down and up another floor. And trying to ask somebody how to get out of the building was quite interesting, especially since none of them spoke English. And so they were trying to, you know, they tried to tell us where to go. And I'm like, I have no idea. I'm like, we're going to miss this bus and we're going to be stuck in this Russian hospital for the rest of our lives. But another thing I really was not expecting, I don't really know what I expected. I guess I just expected we would go and have fun. I'm a person that up to that point, even though I had done stand up and I had done performing and stuff, relatively like in my normal life, it was like I was pretty much unrecognizable. I could walk down the street and nobody knew who I was. I could walk into a restaurant and nobody would wait on me because I just appeared invisible. And so Patch's rule was when you got to a place, you know, even when you left your home to go to the airport to fly to the trip, he wanted us to dress as a clown. He wanted us to wear clown clothes to the airport and clown shoes and all that kind of stuff. And so when you kind of go from nobody knowing who you are to now everybody everywhere you go, they see you. They're like, oh, it was a clown. You know, everybody comes rushing up to you and you have all these Russians rushing up to you wanting photos and stuff. It's quite a kind of a culture shock. You know, it's like everywhere we went, we were the center of attention. I mean, one of the evenings we had off, we went to the Russian ballet, but we were all dressed as clowns. So they set us way up in the balcony so nobody would see us. But of course, everybody saw us. So they're all like, look at the clowns and, you know, see what the clowns are doing. And it got to be a lot. And the funny thing was, you know, so this was a 14-day trip. So we had 7 days in Moscow and then 7 days in St. Petersburg. And so on the first 7 days, for us who thought it was a lot, he's like, okay, we're going to allow some of the clowns to take a day off. You can not go. You can take your clown costumes off. You can just do whatever you want to do. So the roommate that I had, we decided we were going to take the day off. And so we started walking around Russia and we found like this giant mall in Russia. And so we were just shopping and people would walk by. And of course I'm going, oh. You know, and I'm like waving at all everybody. And then I was like, why are these people looking at me so strange? You know, they're all giving me like this really weird look. And my roommate said, well, it's because we're not in costume. And I'm like,
Oh
oh.
no. That's funny.
I said, oh my golly, they probably think I've escaped from some like mental ward or something. So I'm just wandering around, like, hello, hello, you know, and just wearing like a normal clothes. So.
That's funny. Yeah, that would be the only thing more shocking than probably seeing a clown walking around the mall is just some random man going, eh, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So even though it was supposed to be our day off, it tended not. We actually had more fun on that day off because we got to laughing about that for so long. I was like, I cannot believe that I was not in costume, and here I was, you know, still acting like a clown. So.
That's funny for sure. So I guess I want to ask you, we just talked about, Patch Adams behind you and Emmett Kelly. Those are two very different kinds of clowning, so to speak. So when you were creating your own kind of character, how did you decide what you wanted to be as far as, a happy clown when, Patch Adams world, or, the hobo sad type clown of Emmett Kelly or something in between? How did you decide what kind of clown you wanted to be?
Well, like, so when I was on the Patch Adams trip, I just needed to get there and figure out what the heck I was even doing. So, what you see here, like with all of the makeup and all the stuff that I had none of that. I had this giant hat that had like moose antlers on it. I had this giant nose. And so I just grabbed stuff from like Walmart and Amazon just to go on this first trip. So I really had like no character per se, for that trip. It was kind of after I did that trip, I then started doing all the things I probably should have done before I went. So I went to like Moose Burger Clown Camp, and I found like a bunch of like clown colleges and camps around the United States, and I started going there to develop a character. I did like the look of Emmett Kelly, and the look that you see here when I first started kind of mirroring the look of Emmett Kelly with the hobo look, and then when I went to one of the other clown conventions, somebody said, well, this is like a lighted goose that I have right here, like with my eyes and my mouth right now. And so but I was like, oh, I kind of still like the tramp look. So then I kind of did the whites here with the hobo look. And then I just kind of just slowly started moving. I didn't like being a sad clown. When we got to places, I felt like, but sometimes I will just kind of sit and watch. But for the most part, I like to get in there and play and do fun things. So I, and plus I don't like to sit in the makeup chair and do a lot of makeup because I'm lazy. So I didn't want to have to, put all the stippling on and do all that stuff with the beard and everything. So then it just kind of morphed down to what this is. And when I first started becoming a clown, I decided as a kid I was bullied a lot. So, I decided to kind of do like bullying seminars as a clown. And so I decided I wanted to come up with like a clown name. And so Bullseye the Clown kind of came up when, like if you're somebody who people are making fun of and they're calling you names, it's kind of like they're slinging arrows at you. And then every once in a while, there's a name that just lands that upsets you so much. It's like that hits the bullseye. And so that's kind of where that name came from. And so I actually wrote like a small little book on bullying called Bullseye on Bullying. That's on Amazon. And so that's kind of where all that came. And I wanted to be more of a happy clown, especially if I was going to talk about bullying, because bullying is such a very heavy topic. And so I didn't want to go in there with like this, downer approach and be all, depressed. So I wanted to be have a more uplifting message, and showing that people who are bullied can live successful lives as clowns.
I gotcha. Well, you're making my job as the person interviewing you easy, because every time I'm about ready to ask you a question, you've already answered it. So the next question is going to be about, transitioning into the world of bullying and trying to make a difference there. So I want you just to elaborate a little bit more on that. You said that you had experienced that a little bit when you were younger as well. So it was something that was you know, a passion for you to help other people overcome. Just talk a little bit more about that, and mention a little bit more about what the book is going to teach people too.
I really never wanted to. Originally, when I sat down and I was going to do a book on bullying, or I started just to jot some notes down, I was really more fascinated and really wanted this to be more of an adult kind of book, because I was fascinated by the fact that there are people who were bullied as a kid, and some of those kids who are bullied become super successful. You've got people like Susan Boyle, like Lady Gaga, even Jackie Chan. Whenever I was doing some research for the book, found out that, you know, he was bullied as a kid, but then they become super, super successful. And then there's other people who were bullied as a kid, and they just kind of fade away into obscurity. They don't go for the jobs that they wanted to do. They kind of work jobs that are beneath their qualifications, because they are so, I guess they have such a low self-esteem of themselves that they don't want to go out for jobs that they could have gone out for, that they should have gone out for. And I kind of found myself in that. I mean, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I wanted to be like this huge celebrity. And so now I'm in my 50s and I'm a clown. A clown that nobody's heard of. So that was kind of the idea behind the book originally. But then as I just started to write and jot some stuff down, I mean, it's not a very big book. It's a thin book, but it just kind of, I call it a blueprint for how to beat the bullies. And I didn't really want to talk a whole lot about the bully itself. I really wanted to talk about what we can do to overcome the stigma of a person who's been bullied. And then when the clowning thing all took shape, and then I thought, well, let me just try to, and I probably tried to put too much in the book as far as like tried to cover too many topics, but I really wanted to just give like a quick overview of what different scenarios, you know. Back whenever I was growing up, we didn't have the internet, so we didn't have to worry about cyberbullying back then. The bullies made house calls. They would just show up, knock on your door, take your underwear and run it up the flagpole. You know, we didn't have to worry about Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff and people calling you names on the internet. But I do have a chapter on, you know, cyberbullying. And actually, whenever I started going into senior living communities, you would think that people who were in their 80s and 90s, that they would be free from being bullied, either from other residents who live there or from staff or whatever. And I found that, you know, a lot of people were still being bullied up into their 80s and 90s. And so I have a chapter in the book on, if you're a son or a daughter and you're trying to find a nursing home for your mother, some signs to look for when placing them there, just to make sure, you know, talk to the other residents who live there, as opposed to always just talking to the marketing people who are, you know, supposed to tell you how wonderful it is, you know, this is a great place to live, you know. And so there's that in the book. And then I talk about, you know, a lot of reasons why some people are bullied and what you can do. You know, as far as me, I was a quiet kid, which is hard to believe. I was a quiet kid in school. And so I tend to keep to myself. So a lot of times I walk in the hallways and I'd be looking down. And so it was just easier for somebody to come up and, you know, bonk you on the back of the head or push you into a locker because you didn't see it coming. So one of the things I talk about in the book is being aware of your surroundings and making sure that you're alert. I tended to know when the bullies were striking. So, every day after third period, when I go to my locker, that's when they're there to push me into the locker. So I made sure that at the end of third period, I didn't go to my locker. I already had that book with me and I went a different way. And so I would just start replanning the route that I was taking to try to avoid them. So a lot of that stuff is in the book, and that's kind of how you can avoid the bully if you want to avoid the bully. And then also I have some advice in there on how to stand up to the bully if you feel that you really need to stand up to the bully. Did I answer your question?
It did, for sure. And you you continue that path. If you know, if clowning stops working out for you, I think you're going to be a psychic, because the next question was all about how, you know, the bullying is not just on the playground anymore. It is on the computer. And I just wasn't around, you know, bullies in high school. I was, I guess, fortunate enough, but you know, I'm in my mid 30s, so I'm not a kid, but I'm not super old. But the reason why I'm saying that is because I don't remember, you know, the actual I don't remember anybody getting pushed in their locker, and I don't really remember a lot of people bullying. But what I do remember is a lot of things happening on the internet, you know, Facebook and MySpace and people, you know, being mean to each other and that being the drama, which is a whole different world. You know, it's even worse now from what I can imagine. You know, people are so much more online now. You know, when I was younger, yeah, we had all those things, but it didn't consume our life yet, which is what happens now. How do you think bullying has changed, and how do you think that, you know, how can people cope with that? Because it's a little bit different. Like for you, I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, if you were being bullied at school, at least when you get home, there's a little bit of reprieve because, you know, they're not physically there. The internet is always there. I mean, it never leaves you. So that has to be really, 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 really tiring and really, really scary for those who are getting bullied.
As a matter of fact, you touched on something, because when my parents divorced when I was very young, so my mother remarried, and I had an abusive alcoholic stepfather. And so even though I would come home from school and I was no longer getting bullied at school, then I kind of had to avoid and deal with this abusive alcoholic stepfather. So I never kind of got away from it. So that's kind of where a lot of the things in the book was just, it's not all these things that I wrote down in the book, which is like any book, you know, and any advice is not all these things are going to work for everybody. This is just the things that I did to try to cope, to get away and around some of the things that were happening to me. As far as the internet goes, the hardest thing about the internet is people can hide behind a profile. I mean, you don't know if these profiles are real people. They post fake pictures. It's not even them in the photo. And so they have this a little bit of anonymity. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, so, sounds good.
Yeah. So, you know, they hide. And so you don't really know who the person really is bullying you to begin with. And there are certain aspects of certain social media channels that I frequent less and less. Twitter is like my least favorite. I do have a current profile there. I finally reset it up after I was trying to launch our Guatemala tour for 2025. I reset it up under a different name than I had before. So, but I only have like, I don't know, like 30 followers or something. I try not to post there if I can help it. I just found that seemed to be the worst as far as cyberbullying came, because you have no control over who likes your posts or who wants to follow you. That's why I like Facebook, because when people want to be your Facebook friend, you can actually go on there and you can look at their profile. And that's one thing I do talk about in the book. And that's something I do is I should have probably, you know, my max followers on my personal Facebook page, but I have like 1,000. And that's because I will, if somebody friends me, I'm like, well, who are you? So I'll go to their Facebook page and I'll start scrolling up and down their feed. And if I see a bunch of stuff that, you know, is mean or calling people names, then I reject the friend request, because I feel like this is my space on the internet, so I can choose who I want to interact with. And so I just make sure that I interact with the right people. And so I just make sure that's what one thing that I tell, you know, kids, you don't have to be friends with everybody. I know we feel like we want to be friends with everybody, especially if we're not popular in school, which I wasn't. And so at first I thought, oh, I got to get, you know, my million friends, and I got to get, you know, now I would like, and now I also don't want to spend like 3 hours on Facebook at night trying to going through all of the friends' posts and going, okay, what did somebody say about this? And I like Instagram, because like I said, Instagram is, you can kind of moderate that one as too. And it's just looking at a bunch of different photos and stuff like that. So I don't seem to see a whole lot of, at least from my perspective, I don't see a whole lot of bullying as much on Instagram, and probably more on Facebook than I do on Instagram. But Twitter seems to be the worst culprit. So that's kind of, and so I would suggest, you know, parents to help, you know, talk to their kids too about, you know, monitoring their time on there and seeing who they're actually interacting with on there. I try not to spend a whole lot of time on Twitter. Facebook and Instagram, I kind of spend too much time on.
I gotcha. I want to get to your own trips and tours and stuff that you were just mentioning here a minute ago, but I want to ask you a question, because you mentioned it in our email correspondence, and I'm intrigued by your answer. But you said something about talking about the most important thing help people be happy? What's the answer to that?
Well, you know, one of the things people always ask me a lot of times is, you know, because let's face it, there's a lot of depressed people. Whenever I went on the Russia trip, I was still harboring all of that back stuff of being bullied as a kid. And I was even bullied probably into my teens and some in my adult life before I kind of made this switch into a different mindset. And then my dad passed away. So I was also dealing with grief. And then I was also dealing with all these pent up feelings with my stepdad and the kids who bullied me in school and all that stuff. And so I went on this trip with Patch Adams. And our only rule was be happy wherever you go. Happy, 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 happy. And so we were happy for 14 straight days. We were, you know, always doing things for other people. And you didn't really have time to focus on your own problems. And so what I found was when I came home and I really kind of was decompressing from all that happiness, you know, I was like, good grief, that was a lot of happy stuff. So I wanted to try to like process the grief and the bullying and all that stuff. And when I came home, I just realized that all that stuff was gone. It wasn't important to me to dwell on the bad stuff that happened to me. Really, my only thought was, you know, now who can I go out and make happy today? And so to me, it's like, and I know this is not going to work for everybody, so don't sue me. But for me, I have found that the best way to combat like my own depression is to go out and to do nice things for other people and not expect anything in return. I mean, I don't know. There's a couple of people that I know on my trip that I connected with as far as like people in the hospitals and things. But I'm sure that there are other people who we helped in some other ways that I'll never know. And so it's like, I just go and I help people without any expectation of anything in return. I don't expect a thank you. I don't expect, them to write an article about me. I don't expect anything. I don't expect money from it. I don't expect any. My job is just to go out and make as many people happy and do what I can for other people. And in turn, that makes me happier knowing that I've done it. And if I've helped them, great. And like, and I'm sure I'm probably on some weird Russians Facebook page right now because they really enjoyed me from 2018. And I made some impact, but that's an impact that I'll never know. And that's okay. You know, it's just, I think a lot of times when we attempt to do something nice for somebody, we're expecting like this thank you, or some acknowledgement, but sometimes you don't get that, you know, when I visit like, memory care units and dementia wards. That was my biggest thing. I was like, well, they're not even like clapping. They're not saying, you know, they're not getting excited. And so somebody brought it to my attention. They said, you might be reaching them, but they don't know how to express to you their gratitude or that they did receive that. So I've always just kind of took that with me. And all I can do is be happy and do nice things for other people. And so I always suggest for other people who are hurting that that's the best way for them to get out of their funk is to go and do some nice things for other people.
Yeah, no, I think that's always a good thing for anyone to do for sure. And just like you mentioned, obviously we've got to say that, you know, that isn't going to work for everybody. I mean, obviously right. There's something to be said for, you know, if you are truly dealing with depression and have those issues, you know, seeking help from, you know, professionals is always a good thing. You can't just always, you know, wish it away. But right, yeah, right. I think that's a positive for sure. You know, you talked about doing things for other people. That's a great segue into the things that you are doing, and that is your clown company and the trips you're creating. Talk a little bit about that.
As I mentioned, I've gone on quite a few trips with Patch Adams. I've gone to Russia. We've gone to Morocco, Costa Rica, Mexico. And so on these trips, of course, we're always, you know, making people happy. We're uplifting spirits. We're offering smiles and hugs and giving out balloons and things like that. And the one thing that I felt was missing, I'm like, wow, it's too bad that we just can't leave something behind when we go, like something tangible, like, you know, that they really need. And so while I was kind of thinking about that and trying to get my own tour up and running, one of the ladies in an assisted living that I was working in, she said, well, I have a niece who's starting a a church organization in Guatemala, and they would love to have clowns come to Guatemala. And so when we got to talking to her, one of the things she was trying to get started up, but not really, wasn't really transpiring the way she was hoping, was she wanted to get backpacks filled with school supplies to give to the really poor children in Guatemala. Because in Guatemala, because they are so poor, it's like you have to, parents choose, do I feed my children today or do I send them to school? And so a lot of children were not going to school because they couldn't afford the school supplies. So our mission became for that tour, that was actually at the beginning of this year, that was in February, we decided to buy 200 backpacks filled with school supplies and take them into Guatemala and give them out to the poor kids or the kids who could not afford them. And it was funny, we were in this car and we had all these backpacks and we finally had them dropped off in the middle of it was like the middle of this big field up in some volcano somewhere. And I was like, well, nobody's here. And all of a sudden people just started coming like out of the trees. And I mean, there's like, you know, like a couple hundred people that showed up for this event. And it was like, you know, the hills have eyes, you know, all these people coming out of the hills. And so while we were there, you know, the woman, Kim, who was helping us organize the stuff in Guatemala, she said, you know, a lot of these people that we're seeing, they don't have food. And I said, oh, well, that's not our mission. Our mission is to give them backpacks and to give them this. You know, so I was kind of like that single focus at first. And so the more I thought about it, I was like, well, okay, how much is food? You know, because, you know, we've allotted so much for this trip and people have paid to come on the trip. And so we found that we could buy 200 pounds of corn for $50, you know, $50 American money. And I'm like, wow, really? That's all? And then the rice was like, we could buy 200 pounds of rice for like $100. And so we ended up buying 200 pounds of rice, 200 pounds of corn. We bought 500 juice boxes and 500 packs of cookies. And everywhere we went, in addition to giving out the backpacks and then also, you know, playing with the kids and doing all this stuff, at the end of every trip or at the end of every place that we went, we had a time where people could line up and we would hand out food as well. And so that is what we're planning to do again in February of 2025, is we're going to go back and do the same thing. One of the places that we went was, it was like they call it an asilo, I think is how you say it. It's like a nursing home. But this is a place where families would just take their aged parents and they would just take them over there and they would drop them off. And let somebody else take care of them. And then they would take their home and their parents' money and then leave their parents into this little place. So there was like 60 residents who lived in this particular place. And so we had gone in there and we actually had our lady who was helping us cook our food while we were there. We actually had meals prepared that we actually took into this nursing home so that we could give them a hot meal, because this nursing home is not like supported by like government funding or by, you know, the country or anything like that. So their only food that they get has to be donations from the public, you know, and from, you know, local people. And so, and the nice thing was since we left in February, at least once a month, a lot of the people that we encounter while we're there, they still get together and at least once a month, take a hot meal to all the residents over at this particular place. And I still send money back to Guatemala so that they can continue to do that as well. And so that's kind of how this all started, was, you know, I just wanted to leave behind whatever they needed, you know. So like I said, when we go back in February, we may find that some of the other places that we go, they might need shoes or they might need clothing or they might need something else other than the food. And if we find that that's the case, then we'll just make a pivot and we'll get whatever they need. And we can't always take all that stuff in because, you know, when you go through customs and stuff, some things you're not allowed to bring in. And if you're bringing in stuff that's more than $500, you know, they confiscate it or whatever. So, which is okay, because I would rather put the money back into the economy of the country that we go to. So if we go with, you know, money to buy food, we buy the food there in the country and then we take it out and then we disperse it to whoever needs it the most. And so that's kind of what we're hoping to do again in 2025. And so, like, so we're always looking for a couple of things. We're always looking for people to go. We definitely would love, and you don't have to be a clown to go. I was not a clown to go when I went on my trip. You learn as we go. And you know, you don't have to learn how to juggle or do any of that thing. Some of the clowns, all they did was hand out the food and they played with the kids in some way, whether it was, you know, bring a little soccer ball or whatever it happens to be. It's just really being in the moment and seeing what they need in the moment, whether it's playing with balloons or bubbles or anything. Because whenever I went to Russia, I had none of that stuff. So we're always looking for people to go. We do have some people who want to go who can't afford to go. So we are always looking for somebody if they want to sponsor somebody to go. I've got some people that I would love to get sponsored to go on the trip so that they can see what the trips are all about. And then, of course, we have like a store, an online store that people can buy stuff in. And then we get the proceeds that we get from that is all used for buying food or supplies in the country that we're going to. So there's many ways that people can help us. The name of my organization is called Clowns on a Mission.
No, I love it. And I want to ask you in a moment how people are going to connect with you and how people are going to be able to help with that. But I do have one last question before that. And that is, I don't think I've talked to anyone in the world of clowning before, but I've talked to people who do cosplay and people who the Miss Mermaid Texas and all kinds of different things that, you know, they dress up. And it's always one common theme. And that is kind of a thing that, you know, they got into this world of, you know, dressing up. And I've talked to people that, you know, do princess parties and stuff too. And so they got into the world thinking, you know, they're going to be dealing with a lot of kids, and that is most of the case. But kind of the funny thing is they say, and maybe you don't put yourself in these situations, but the only thing that likes princesses or mermaids better than a child is a person with maybe just a little bit too much to drink. So how do you feel about the world of clowning? I'm sure you get a lot of adults just really excited about you too.
Actually, yeah. And like, you know, for honestly, when I went to Russia, I would also see like the angst on parents' faces when we walked into like a hospital room and their kid was either badly burned or there was something wrong with their child. And so I would interact just as much with the adult in the room as I did with the child, because they need a little joy and happiness in their life too, because they have a lot of stress dealing with somebody who's sick. And the kids who were in the hospital beds, they would enjoy, like if I played a trick on the nurse who walked into the room, you know, because they kind of see this nurse as almost like an authority figure. And so, you know, sometimes the nurse asks them to do things that they don't want to do. And so they always find it funny. Like, you know, if I have these little rubber chickens that I fling, you know, so they would get really excited whenever I would fling like a rubber chicken and hit the nurse or whatever. And, but yeah, I know I have found that probably a lot of the places we would go, like in the subways, we would go down into the subways in Russia. And I found that more adults came up to us than kids, actually. You know, we would actually have a lot of people come up on our photo, and that's great. You know, I say that, you know, like there are some clowns who say, kind of, clowns are just for kids. And I've never felt that, you know, like I said, that's why I continue to go to nursing homes and memory cares. Because everybody needs joy and everybody needs happiness, and we connect with whoever's there. And like I said, I have found just as much satisfaction and excitement from adults that I clown with than I do with the kids.
Yeah, I love it. Now tell people how they're going to connect with you, how they're going to connect with Bullseye directly, how they're going to connect with Clowns on a Mission. Just shout out all those points if you would.
You can connect with Clowns on a Mission at clownsonamission.com. On there, we also have information on how to sign up for the Guatemala tour. So there's like a little link that says Guatemala. You can just click right on that. That'll talk about the Guatemala tour. You can connect with me on Instagram. I think it's Clowns on a Mission Official, because somebody already had Clowns on a Mission on Instagram, even though they're not a clown or on a mission. and I didn't have the heart to tell them to get rid of their handle. So we're Clowns on a Mission Official at Instagram. I have a website, bullseyetheclown.com. That's where you can learn a lot of stuff about bullying and just some places that I'm also going to be. Facebook, we have a group for Clowns on a Mission. It's actually a Facebook group. that you can join. And then we also have I'm Bullseye the Clown on Bullying on Facebook. So you can find us on all of those places. Plus, I have a Clowns on a Mission YouTube channel.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate your time.
No, thank you so much for inviting me. It's been fun.
So that was Bullseye. What an amazing guy. Just doing so much awesome stuff in the world, whether it is making people smile when they're in the hospital, whether it is providing food and other supplies to people in underprivileged communities, or whether it's writing a book about helping people overcome bullying. I think that the work that Bullseye is doing is just really, really awesome. I really, really appreciate his time today. Check out that book. Even if you're not somebody who has dealt with bullying, I do think that there's good things for self-confidence in that book for sure. Or maybe, you know, learning about that, those things are going to help you make sure other people aren't bullied. So check out that book for sure. The links to that will be in the show notes. All of his other links will be in the show notes as well. He mentioned, you know, helping with some of his missions. Maybe that's something that you can do. All of that information will be in the show notes. So if it calls upon your heart to join in, I know that he'd love to have you. If this is your first time listening to this podcast, please go leave a written review on Apple. Leave a 5-star rating on Spotify and Apple. That really, really helps. Follow along on Instagram and on TikTok, Not Enough Podcast. All those things really help the podcast for sure. But if you do nothing else, catch us next week. Take it away, Chris.
This has been Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff. Thank you for listening. Be sure to join us next time, where we will interview another amazing guest who is sure to make you laugh or make you think. Or, hey, maybe even both. But until then, keep being awesome.